Good afternoon. You're listening to KFSK News for Wednesday, March 25th. I'm Olivia Rose. Two drivers were transported to the Petersburg Medical Center after a collision around 10 a.m. yesterday on the Mitkoff Highway near Petersburg Cemetery, about 2 miles south of town. Here's Dave Berg, a spokesperson for the Petersburg Volunteer Fire Department.
There was a car heading southbound, and as he was accelerating into the 40-mile-an-hour zone, he ran into a patch of ice and lost control of the vehicle. He crossed the center line and hit another vehicle, another truck, that was trying to avoid him, and the vehicles collided.
He said when the two trucks collided, one spun off into the ditch and the other ended up on the side of the highway. Berg said road conditions this time of year can be dangerous.
You know, any place that the sun hasn't been shining on the road makes it slick. And so we certainly urge people to be cautious when they're driving.
In addition to the two drivers, Berg said one volunteer firefighter had a minor injury in connection to the incident and was also taken to the hospital. The U.S. Forest Service is planning to hold a virtual meeting today for residents across Southeast to share feedback on a revised Tongass National Forest Management Plan. The plan will set the agency's priorities for the forest over the next decade or so. The virtual town hall is tonight at 5:30 p.m. The online opportunity is in addition to in-person public meetings the agency announced earlier this month. Those opportunities to share feedback are planned from the end of March through early May and will take place in Juneau, Haines, Petersburg, and 15 other Southeast communities. Forest plans are typically updated every 10 to 15 years, and the last one for the Tongass was completed in 2016. The plan will influence how the Forest Service balances a range of forest uses, including logging, recreation, tourism, subsistence harvest, and ecosystem health. Find the link for Wednesday's virtual meeting and the schedule and location details for the in-person meetings with this story online at ktoo.org. The U.S. Army Corps of Engineers is prioritizing short- and medium-term solutions to glacial outburst flooding in the Mendenhall Valley. That's what leaders of the Corps said at a press briefing in Juneau yesterday. But as KTOO's Alex Solomon reports, that doesn't mean the agency has lost sight of the lake taps they chose as their preferred long-term solution back in December.
At a press briefing in the Juneau International Airport conference room, Assistant Secretary of the Army for Civil Works, Adam Tell, said the agency never backed out of its commitment to provide the Mendenhall Valley with a long-term solution to glacial outburst flooding. He said the agency is working on short, medium, and long-term solutions at the same time.
In my view, we can't wait a decade to deliver, or 6 years or 15 years. We can't wait that long to deliver results for the citizens of this community. And so we're tackling short and medium with the same aggression that we're tackling long.
The Army Corps had landed on a lake tap as the long-term solution after a three-day meeting in Juneau late last year. A lake tap would involve digging a tunnel through Bullard Mountain to continuously drain the glacial basin that fills with rain and meltwater, so the water can't rush out all at once each year. The local city and tribal governments favored the idea. But last month, City Manager Katie Kester announced in a Juneau Assembly meeting that the Army Corps had reversed on the long-term solution. Tell says that's not what happened. He says the Army Corps has been consistent on getting a long-term solution, and the only thing that's changed is his immediate focus.
I've turned my focus to ensuring we're doing everything we can right now to protect the citizens of Juneau through short and medium-term strategies. I mentioned we're expanding the HESCO barriers, we're raising the HESCO barriers, we're looking at the channel. We've got a significant portion of our national inventory of pumps headed this way today.
The temporary levee remains the short-term solution meant to protect hundreds of homes in the Mendenhall Valley from the flood expected this summer. It's made of HESCO barriers, which are steel cages lined with fabric and filled with sand, that line the Mendenhall River through suburban neighborhoods. The temporary levee just barely protected valley neighborhoods from catastrophic flooding last summer, when floodwaters rose within inches of the top, leaked through in some areas, and caused the barriers to slump in others. Colonel Jeff Palazzini is the Alaska District Commander for the Army Corps. He said at the press briefing that the Army Corps is working with the city to help raise the levee it built last year somewhere between 1 and 2 feet. And the agency will also build phase two of the levee at no cost to the city, which will extend the barrier to unprotected areas from Backloop Bridge to just before the Juneau International Airport.
So that adds about 4 to 4.5 miles to the system. We're talking both sides of the river.
Palazzini said the agency will also haul more boulders in, called riprap, to create a continuous armored riverbank and guard against erosion. Tell says that raising the barrier even a small amount could result in much more protection for the community.
A small investment in the height can make the chances of overtopping 5 times smaller.
The city issued a press release earlier this month saying that the temporary levee should be completed in July. For the last 3 years, the flood has occurred in August. But the HESCO barriers were never meant to last forever, and engineers have said there's a limit to what they can withstand. So in the medium term, Tell says that the Army Corps is looking at options that could protect the valley when the temporary levee expires, and a long-term solution is still on the way. He said everything is on the table, but named 2 ideas. Sturdier barriers that would go in along the river, and modifying the river channel in some way. That could potentially look like dredging out a side channel or straightening out the river to move floodwater out to sea more quickly.
You know, I think there's been conversation within the community for years about straightening the channel. This could be done relatively quickly and for low cost. The question is, does that straightening actually just move the risk to a different part of the community?
Tell says extensive modeling of the river is underway. He says the agency has a pretty good understanding of the upper half of the river and will understand the lower half in the coming weeks. Short and medium-term solutions handle the torrent once billions of gallons of water are already coursing through the river, close to neighborhoods, businesses, and community infrastructure. Tell says the lake tap is still the Army Corps' preferred option to put an end to Juneau's glacial outburst flooding at the source. A tunnel through Bullard Mountain would work like a bathtub drain and continuously empty water from Suicide Basin so it can't rise to a level that would create a catastrophic flood.
If you're looking to solve this problem over the course of 10 or more years, it's at this moment appears to be the most viable technically. But that doesn't mean that the other ones are other options are off the table.
Tell says that nationwide, the agency is working to build infrastructure more quickly with less paperwork.
As we talk about timelines, we have to be clear-eyed about where we are as an organization and our ability to deliver quickly. And I'm committed to fixing that nationwide, but in terms of timeline, nothing has changed about our timeline.
And though he says nothing has changed in the Army Corps' timeline for a long-term solution, he did not specify what that timeline is. In past estimates, Army Corps staff have said a long-term solution could take from 6 years to around a decade. Army Corps staff say they need to go through technical and modeling work to ensure that the chosen solution is designed properly. In Juneau, I'm Alex Solomon.
The state of Alaska is delaying construction on the first phase of a controversial ferry terminal proposed to connect Juneau and Haines due to a permitting issue. Work on the first phase of the Cascade Point Ferry Terminal project was originally planned for late summer. That would have entailed the construction of an access road, a new bridge, a gate, and an upland staging area, but not the ferry terminal itself. But the State Department of Transportation and Public Facilities said last week that the agency needs more time to work on its permit due to a change in direction from the U.S. Army Corps of Engineers. In a notice, the agency said it will now postpone construction until after 2026. Initially, the Army Corps told DOT that it could apply for a permit with complete information about Stage 1 of the project and a draft design for Stage 2. The latter would entail the design and construction of the actual terminal. But DOT said in its notice that the Army Corps reversed course once it reviewed the initial application. Now, the permitting agency wants all design information about both stages before moving forward. The agency's notice said it is, quote, committed to honoring this permitting process. The notice added that DOT will begin the formal consultation process with tribes once the Army Corps says the permit application is ready. The move came a week before DOT was set to host town halls about the project, which has sparked opposition from lawmakers, local officials, and community members in Haines, Skagway, and Juneau. Critics say the new terminal would complicate, rather than ease, regional travel. The agency said it will hold public meetings at a later date. The North Slope community of Kaktovik is known as the polar bear capital of the U.S. Hundreds of tourists used to flock to the Inupiat village of about 250 people to see the bears. But about 5 years ago, the tours were halted because of opposition from residents. Alona Naden with the Alaska Desk has more on what happened to the tours and what the community is doing to revive them.
It's polar bear ground right there.
Nathan Gordon Jr. is driving his truck on the spit right outside of Kaktovik. He's mayor and leads the town's polar bear patrol program. Under his back seat, he has a shotgun, and in his console, shotgun rounds and cracker shells.
They're explosive rounds, both of them. I have those ones, then lethal rounds in the front, and then less than lethal rounds in here. So I keep them separate.
Kaktovik sits on Barter Island on the Beaufort Sea coast, offshore from the Arctic Wildlife Refuge. In late summer and fall, up to 80 polar bears come on land, a trend that has been increasing as the sea ice diminishes. That brought the need for patrol and created opportunities for polar bear viewing that flourished before the pandemic.
It was booming during the fall time. Like, the whole 3 months would cover the other 9 months of money that was made at the hotel.
But in 2020, the pandemic put a pause on visitation. Then the federal government halted the tours following significant community opposition. They never reopened. Gordon says Kaktovik leaders have been working to revive them.
I'm excited for tour season to be back, both for the community and those who work for it. Let's get this place back to making money, and it'll be great for everybody.
Kitil Reitan was among those who caught the polar bear tourism wave. A prominent Norwegian musher who repeatedly competed in the Iditarod, Reitan lived in Kaktovik for decades and started the company Kaktovik Tours in 2010.
We started in very small scale and it grew every year. And the last year, the whole season was almost fully booked. So it was very popular and clients were very happy to come and see the polar bears in Kaktovik.
By 2019, he says he and his two children took several hundred tourists a season on their two boats, a rare economic opportunity in a village with limited jobs.
We were able to make a year income in about 6 weeks.
Reitan was not alone. At least five Kaktovik companies offered polar bear tours, according to the city's comprehensive plan. The number of tourists soared from about 50 in 2010 to over 1,000 in 2015. But Kaktovik polar bear tourism grew so quickly, residents were worried it was interfering with subsistence practices and disrupting life in the village. While many guides were local, there were also outside companies that flew tourists for a day without spending money in the community. Nora Jane Burns is a former guide who also helped found Polar Bear Patrol. She says that some tourists and guides approached bears too closely or even fed and baited them. But the main source of pushback to tours was an argument that visitors would book out seats on small flights and limit the amount of freight that was coming in.
That was the catalyst that kind of got everybody, especially when we have elders that go out for medical, and then when they try to come back, the flights would be booked.
The COVID-19 pandemic shut down the tours. And a year later, the U.S. Department of Interior issued an order to pause commercial polar bear viewing permits until the effects of the industry were more defined. Since then, the U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service, the agency that oversees boat tours, has been collaborating with the city and village of Kaktovik, as well as Kaktovik Inupiat Corporation. They have been working on a management plan for polar bear viewing. Gordon says that this time around, he wants the community to develop infrastructure for tourists and focus more on educating them through brochures, signs, videos, and in-person conversations.
Just putting out knowledge to those who come in would be the easiest answer to fixing tourism problems. I think we'll be way more prepared for tourism this time.
But who will run the tours? Burns is busy with her job at Kaktovik Public Works Department. And Reitan sold his boats and moved to Nome. But they both hope the younger generation will take over polar bear tours, if and when they're back. With reporting from Kaktovik, I am Alona Naiden.
For KFSK, I'm Olivia Rose.